So what's left for Hong Kong's democracy fight? That's the most valid question.
That question is being asked after a massive resignation of Hong Kong lawmakers. This is Friday, November 13th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, the U.S. president launches new efforts to change election results. The UN warns of a steep rise in another disease. Australia will investigate its own soldiers for possible war crimes in Afghanistan. Much of the Philippines has been inundated by two major storms. All of that and more on today's VOA Asia. Hong Kong's opposition lawmakers staged a final show of defiance in the legislature Thursday before resigning to protest the dismissal of four of their colleagues in what they see as another bid by Beijing to suppress democracy in that city. Pro-democracy lawmaker Lam Chuk Ting briefly displayed a banner in the building reading, "Carrie Lam is corrupting Hong Kong and hurting its people. She will stink for 10,000 years." He described it as his last protest in the Legislative Council. The city's chief executive was not in the assembly at the time. Meanwhile, pro-democracy lawmaker Claudia Mo arrived with her resignation letter in hand while dressed in black, a symbolic reference to last year's anti-extradition protest, while holding a yellow umbrella, a nod to the 2014 umbrella movement.
I'm sad, but also relieved. Relieved in the sense that this council at the moment is very, very painful to deal with because it's so full of fake speeches and it's so full of fake sincerity. All they do is just being the government's mouthpiece.
The withdrawal of the opposition from the city legislature will mean an end for what has been one of the few forums for dissent after Beijing's imposition of national security legislation in June and coronavirus restrictions ended pro-democracy protest that began last year. But Mo looked forward to a different future.
So, no fight in the street and no fight now for the time being, at least at the legislative level. So what's left for Hong Kong's democracy fight? That's the most valid question. But it doesn't mean that, the end of it and we all go home and forget about democracy or human rights or any core values. We do not underestimate Hong Kong people, especially our young, because they are fighting for their future.
We'll have more on what has happened in Hong Kong in just a moment. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at voanews.com. Biden reassures U.S. allies in calls with leaders of Japan, South Korea, and Australia. UK to consider sanctions against China for breaching Hong Kong Treaty. U.S. Embassy in Pakistan draws a backlash for a Twitter post. War, not politics, as a troubled election deepens tensions in Myanmar's Rakhine State. Blast kills Afghan journalist working for a U.S. media outlet. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. We continue on VOA Asia. Pro-democracy legislative members in Hong Kong staged the final show of defiance in the legislature Thursday before resigning in protest against the dismissal of four of their colleagues in what they see as another bid by Beijing to suppress democracy in the city. VOA Steve Miller spoke with reporter Justin Solomon in Hong Kong to get details and learn where the pro-democracy party might go from here.
These pro-democracy lawmakers were upset because of actions that Beijing took. Beijing took it upon themselves to take four lawmakers out of LegCo, out of the Legislative Council here. And they said these members are no longer members. They have been going against their oath of what they signed up to be, to support the system here. And And these lawmakers said, you know what, you're kicking them out. We're all out. We're not going to stand for this.
So what was Beijing particularly, you know, upset with these four lawmakers? What evidence did they cite as reasoning to, you know, remove them from LegCo?
But there's a lot of rationale that was given, but one of the main reasons that everybody's kind of pointing to is this filibustering that these legislators have been doing, where nothing really has been able to get done at LegCo. They'll stand up, they'll delay votes, they'll delay conversations about votes, and oftentimes those turn into heated arguments. And back in May, there was one that turned really ugly, and some lawmakers were even arrested over that.
Over the past several years, pro-democracy lawmakers in Hong Kong have lost the majority in LegCo, and pro-Beijing lawmakers have had the opportunity to push through their legislation. So with these 15 lawmakers who resigned today, you know, where does the legislature go forward without the so-called opposition sitting there?
Well, look, I think it's important to look back just a little bit, though. If you go back to the summer, there was a sense that the Democratic parties here were actually gaining steam and could potentially win enough seats in what was going to become going to be the election in September for Legislative Council. There was a real thought that they could take over majority here. What happened? Well, that forward motion was halted at the end of July when we saw two things, right? We saw a mass disqualification of candidates, including Joshua Wong, and then the announcement from the city's leader, Carrie Lam, that the elections themselves were going to be postponed for a full year because of COVID-19. And at the time, to be fair, Hong Kong was seeing a surge of cases. I think at that time it was nearly 100 cases a day, but many argued that was just an excuse.
Hong Kong experienced about a year of pro-democracy protests. So with these lawmakers resigning their positions in the Legislative Council, what's been the reaction in Hong Kong?
The protest movement in Hong Kong has certainly slowed down because of the national security law. Every now and then there are a few protests, or it may be better to say memorials of protests, where there might be an anniversary of a protest or an anniversary of a time when the police fired an excessive amount of tear gas. So some protesters might gather to remember that moment. And that's their way of kind of getting away with it without it becoming anything too big. But for the most part, people aren't taking to the streets like we saw before. And there's a real fear. People are afraid of this law and of the consequences of it. And you can look at the 12 pro-democracy protesters that tried to escape to Taiwan and were taken into custody in an hour in Shenzhen in mainland, and people haven't heard from them since. So it's worrisome, and it really scares people to go out on the streets.
VOA Steve Miller speaking with reporter Justin Solomon in Hong Kong. Happening now in Asia, China is facing an increased risk of local transmission of the new coronavirus in the winter due to imported cases as the spread of the global pandemic accelerates, so says a senior official at the country's health authority. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. President Donald Trump's campaign launched a new legal effort this week aimed at stopping the certification of election results in Pennsylvania as the president continues to refuse to concede to President-elect Joe Biden. VOA White House correspondent Patsy Wiedekaswera has the latest.
On Veterans Day in the United States, President Donald Trump laid a wreath at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier at Arlington National Cemetery, while President-elect Joe Biden visited the Philadelphia Korean War Memorial. Neither man gave remarks. Trump refuses to concede after last week's presidential election showed Biden to be the projected winner. The president declared on Twitter that we will win. With the state of Alaska being called for Trump, he now has 217 electoral votes, while Biden has 279. A candidate needs a minimum of 270 to win. Three states have not yet been called: Arizona, Georgia, and North Carolina. On top of various legal challenges already filed in several battleground states claiming voter fraud, the Trump campaign has launched a new lawsuit aiming to block certification of the election results in Pennsylvania. Paul Schiff Bergman is a professor of law at George Washington University Law School.
It is possible that if they kick up enough dust and enough allegations and uncertainty, that they could potentially convince Republican-controlled legislatures to seat a rival slate of electors that are opposite of what the votes in the state and the voters in the state called for. That would be an extraordinarily extreme step. It would really be a coup against the American people and a destruction of the democratic process.
Meanwhile, two states are headed for a recount, Wisconsin and Georgia. Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger.
With the margin being so close, it will require a full by-hand recount in each county. This will help build confidence. It will be an audit, a recount, and a re-canvass all at once.
The Trump campaign celebrated the announcement with campaign communications director Tim Murtaugh saying, "This is an important first step in the process to ensure that the election was fair and that every legal vote was counted." So far, none of the legal challenges mounted by the Trump campaign has succeeded in providing evidence for their claim of ballot count fraud, something Democrats are eager to point out.
We are a week out, and the president is still desperately searching for evidence of fraud. He won't find it because it doesn't exist.
Even if Trump is successful in some of his lawsuits and recount demands, analysts say it's unlikely to overturn Biden's victory. Republican strategist Rob Stutzman.
It does appear reasonable what the media, both the left-leaning and right-leaning media, have concluded, that it is impossible for Trump to make up the deficit he now faces in key states like Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Nevada.
By law, state electors have to formally cast their votes for president and vice president in mid-December. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. With VOA Asia, also follow radio program hosts VOA Stevenson and VOA Melman. VOA Asia Twitter. We're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. Mongolia's health minister says that country recorded its first domestic coronavirus transmission on Wednesday following hundreds of imported cases. The minister said a woman in Ulaanbaatar had been infected by her husband, a truck driver delivering goods from Russia. All of the big stories come your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. You're listening to VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. The World Health Organization reports measles cases and deaths have soared around the globe since 2016. It reports an increase in cases to nearly 270,000 last year, while more than 207,000 people died, a 50% increase from 2016 levels. As Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva, many of those becoming sick are children.
The World Health Organization reports a steady and steep decline in the number of children getting immunizations against this killer disease. The UN agency says the failure to inoculate children on time with two doses of measles vaccines is the main driver for increased cases and deaths. It says vaccination coverage remains well below the 95% needed to control the disease and prevent outbreaks and deaths. Added to this mix is the coronavirus pandemic. Although reported cases of measles are lower this year than last, WHO says efforts to control the coronavirus outbreak have resulted in disruptions in vaccination. WHO senior technical advisor for measles and rubella, Natasha Crowcroft, tells VOA different strategies are needed to prevent new measles outbreaks in the time of COVID-19, the disease brought on by the coronavirus.
The number one action we need to take is to prevent outbreaks from happening in countries where we've got the highest risk. And there are several where the there isn't the ability to, or the health system in place to be able to rely on.
Procroft says countries where routine immunization for children was happening will recover quickly from delays or suspended coverage during this difficult period. She says weak countries will continue to be at risk of deadly outbreaks unless swift action is taken to close this widening gap. The WHO reports more than 94 million people are at risk of missing vaccines because nationwide campaigns have been put on pause in 26 countries. This led to huge outbreaks in the Democratic Republic of Congo and Madagascar. 8 of the 26 countries now have resumed their campaigns. They include Brazil, Central African Republic, Democratic Republic of Congo, Ethiopia, Nepal, Nigeria, Philippines, and Somalia. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Coronavirus questions. Can the virus be spread by mosquito bites? Is there a vaccine or medication that prevents it? Is there any medicine that cures it? The answer to all of the questions is no. The best steps to take: wash your hands, cover your cough, stay at home if you are sick or advised to by local authorities.
Now on VOA Asia, Australia will appoint a special investigator with the power to prosecute allegations of war crimes by its troops in Afghanistan. The move follows a four-year investigation by the government-appointed Inspector General of the Australian Defence Force into the conduct of Australian Special Forces between 2005 and 2016. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
The War Crimes Inquiry focused on allegations of brutality and the unlawful killing of civilians by elite Australian troops in Afghanistan. It examined 55 incidents of alleged breaches of the laws of armed conflict over more than a decade. It didn't look at decisions made in the heat of battle, but rather the treatment of individuals who were clearly either non-combatants or no longer part of the conflict. Criminal prosecutions and military sanctions could follow. Prime Minister Scott Morrison says the inquiry has been a long and painstaking process.
These are incredibly complex events involving actions and conduct in another country in a war. That is not a simple process in terms of the evidence gathering. There are language difficulties, there are international law issues. This is not a simple matter.
The special investigator will be appointed in the coming months to examine the report's evidence. It was compiled in secret over a four-year period and is scheduled to be released in a week. It's likely to be heavily censored on national security grounds. Morrison said Australia had to confront brutal truths about the actions of some of its soldiers. The Prime Minister also said a new panel will be set up to bring about attitudinal change within Australia's Special Air Service Regiment and its 2nd Commando Regiment. Media reports have previously alleged a so-called warrior culture within the elite units. 39,000 Australian servicemen and women have served in Afghanistan since Canberra joined an international coalition following the terror attacks in the United States in September 2001. 41 Australian military personnel have died, including several Special Forces soldiers. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Thanks for being with us on VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. There are an estimated 300,000 drug addicts in Afghanistan's southern city of Kandahar, and authorities say that number is on the rise. The city is unable to help them all, as VOA's Azazula Popal reports from Kandahar. Benson Hamdard narrates.
Nazar Mohammed has registered at a local hospital for addiction treatment, but must wait 4 months to be enrolled.
I'm even ready to get admitted to the hospital right away, but it's not possible because there aren't enough treatment facilities. We want the government to build more hospitals for drug addicts.
Mohammed is not alone. According to a June survey by the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime, about 1 million Afghans between the ages of 15 to 64 suffer from drug addiction. That's about 8% of the country's population. Most addicts here in Kandahar say they want to be enrolled in treatment facilities and are calling on the government to provide more help.
If the number of treatment facilities increase in the city, more addicts will voluntarily join the rehab centers for treatment.
Kandahar residents are worried about the rise of addicts in their neighborhoods.
There are so many addicts in the city, and people are in trouble because of them. They are involved in many things, from stealing small things like shoes and mosques to big thefts. The government needs to take care of these addicts and build a big hospital for their treatment so they can be returned to normal life.
Unemployment and insecurity are often listed as reasons why so many Afghans have chosen drugs to ease their suffering. While the number of drug addicts in Kandahar is estimated at 300,000 people, public health officials acknowledge that the province's only hospital with just 70 beds is by no means enough for those seeking treatment. For Azizullah Popal in Kandahar, Afghanistan, Bejan Hamdard.
This is VOA Asia. Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte Thursday conducted an aerial inspection of Manila after Typhoon Bamco inundated the capital with its powerful winds and torrential rains, causing severe flooding to occur. Tens of thousands of homes and low-lying suburbs were submerged by the floods, prompting residents to scramble onto rooftops awaiting rescue. Duterte addressed his nation.
From the beginning, various government agencies have already been mobilized to respond to the situation on the ground. I renew my call on all local government units and concerned agencies to ensure that the well-being and safety of our people remain the top priority. As president, I guarantee you that your government will do its best to provide assistance in the form of shelters, relief goods, financial aid, and post-disaster counseling. Rest assured, the government will not leave anybody behind.
Bamco, the 21st cyclone to hit the Philippines this year, battered a nation still reeling from Goni, the world's most powerful typhoon this year, that killed 25 people and destroyed thousands of homes early in November. From a child of immigrants drawing on the walls of the family's house to an Emmy-winning visual effects artist drawing for Hollywood, a Cambodian-American talent represents a classic success story of the American dream. Now she hopes to bring the dream to her motherland. VOA's Chetra Chap has more.
Television hit in America like Gotham, Westworld, and Stranger Things, all major hits, and all include visual effects created by an Emmy-winning artist of Cambodian descent.
This is what you get as a Cambodian when you have the proper resources and the support and the courage. Well, this is for the Cambodian people. This is to show courage and to show a voice that no matter where you are, where you come from, you can still show your greatness.
Based in Los Angeles, Cambodian American Sina San says she's found inspiration in her culture.
The Cambodian culture bleeds creativity.
As a child, she lived in a refugee camp in Thailand after her parents escaped the communist Khmer Rouge regime that killed 1.7 million in Cambodia in the 1970s. She arrived in America at 3, and her parents say she shown a love for drawing early on.
Then her father sit her down and ask, "Is drawing what you want to pursue? Are you sure?" She answered, "Yes." He immediately took her to get $400 worth of art supplies.
San won a scholarship to study computer animation at the Art Institute of California in Los Angeles. She has now been producing animation and visual effects for video games, Hollywood films, and television shows for 2 decades. Sina San recently quit her job in Hollywood to start her own company. She said her team wants to inspire creativity in Cambodia and create a sustainable platform that Cambodian artists can collaborate and create. Chatra Chap for VOA News, Los Angeles.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You can like us on Facebook, VOA Asia, or follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. And you can find us on Instagram and YouTube and at voanews.com. Thanks to our managing editor, Diane Dow, and our VOA Asia team, Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. please stay safe and enjoy the day ahead.